If President Bush succeeds in adding private retirement accounts to Social Security, he will not be alone. It's been done in countries from Latin America to Eastern Europe. Some countries report success, while the plans in other countries have led to widespread complaint. One program that can be compared in some ways to the Bush administration proposal is the pension system in Britain. NPR's Kathy Schalk reports on what the British learned.
It seemed like a good idea at the time. Liz Qantas of Cookham remembers when British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher pushed through legislation creating private accounts.
Suddenly, everyone could have the opportunity of having a pension they could manage. It was theirs, it was a private pension, and you wouldn't have to worry about the future for your when you retired. You know, you could have a happy golden retirement.
Private pensions were part of a broader effort to wean Britain from what some called the nanny state. Norma Cohen, who covers pensions for London's Financial Times, likens it to President Bush's vision of an ownership society.
The Thatcherites really wanted to create a nation of home-owning, share-owning citizens, cut taxes, make individuals work and save for their own retirement.
And shift the burden away from the state's existing pay-as-you-go retirement plan. At first, it looked like a roaring success. Millions of Britons collected tax rebates and opened private accounts, and some made money. But today, the mood has soured. People asked about private pensions roll their eyes and shake their heads. Roz Altman, an advisor to Prime Minister Tony Blair's Pension Policy Office and a governor at the London School of Economics, says Britain's experiment with private accounts hasn't worked.
It has led to one scandal after another, one problem after another for most pension savers who are contracted out. People would have been better off putting their money under the mattress rather than putting it into a private pension scheme in many cases.
It turned out that huge numbers of people free to make their own financial decisions made bad ones. Liz Qantas of Cookham was one.
It looked much better on paper. Well, what they were telling you. But of course, you know, the returns they were suggesting were not happening. And this is where it started to go wrong.
The government eventually forced insurers to pay more than a million investors $20 billion in compensation. More scandals followed, including the collapse of one of Britain's oldest and most reputable insurers, Equitable Life. The unfortunate Liz Qantas had taken out a second private pension with them. She rifles through her tiny office, where documents are piled precariously almost to the ceiling.
I get letters like, declines and continuing uncertainty in equity values. The impact of these changes is that from and including 1 July, UK pension policy surrender values will be reduced by 20%. So if your pension fund you think was 100,000, it's now only going to be 80,000. I mean, that is a massive impact.
Stock prices soared in the 1980s and 90s, and some, especially big savers, retired comfortably. But many smaller investors, even those who avoided the scandals, find they're barely breaking even. That's because fees and other administrative charges can eat up 30% of their nest eggs. Robin Ellison is chairman of the National Association of Pension Funds.
Trying to keep track of all these relatively small amounts of money, we're talking about in US terms maybe $20 to $30 a week, is prohibitively expensive. It's very expensive to keep track of relatively small amounts of money. And the government need to check that this money is being paid properly. You just don't want to think of the accounting transactions that take place.
U.S. officials would try to do things differently by regulating accounts more tightly, limiting choices, and holding down fees. But the British have found that changing the rules and fixing problems midstream isn't easy. Amid tighter regulations and a sluggish stock market, financial advisors are now urging many clients with private pensions to get rid of them. Again, Robin Ellison.
To be blunt, for most people, it's not worth their while going private.
But nowadays, many people aren't sure what to do. Therapist Chris Hadfield, who's taken his family out to lunch in London, says he's considering various options. His private pension lost money.
I've been deeply disillusioned by the whole experience and have found myself wondering whether I'd be better off not having a pension scheme and investing in property or some other way of getting continuing income.
Others have simply decided not to save at all. Near the restaurant lies Drury Lane, storied home of the Muffin Man. Inside an old stone building, construction workers crowd onto wooden benches eating sandwiches. Billy Kelly and Mick Phillips say they're not putting anything aside.
I don't see the point in wanting to do that. There's so many people getting knocked, isn't there? Like, a lot of people took out pensions years ago when they went to cash them in, they didn't get what they were supposed to get.
People are getting conned out of their money.
Phillips narrows his eyes and flips furiously through his newspaper.
I don't think I ever will be retired. Work till I die, that's it. That's all that you've got. No, that's all that the world can offer. Work till you die.
And if he can't, he says, he'll let the state worry about it. But basic state pensions in Britain are less generous than Social Security is in the U.S., and benefits are rising only slowly. Back in 1980, the government changed the way benefits are indexed, pegging them to prices rather than wages. It's the same reform many are recommending to help fix Social Security. Pension advisor Roz Altman says after 20 years, this seemingly small adjustment has made a real difference.
What's happened in the UK is that the pension, which started off at something like 20 to 30% of average earnings, has now fallen towards 10% of average earnings. Nobody can live on that.
Nearly half of British retirees now qualify for additional benefits under a separate welfare program for the elderly. But Carl Emerson, deputy director of London's Institute for Fiscal Studies, says there's a downside to this too.
This part of the welfare system means that low-income individuals have no incentive to work. They also have no incentive essentially to save for their retirement either.
So he says the government fears that future retirees will be worse off than retirees today.
And unless they start saving more or they choose to retire much later, they're going to end up being relatively much poorer in their retirement than perhaps we think they should be.
So what now? Robin Ellison of the National Association of Pension Funds says there's a growing consensus across the political spectrum that a simpler system would be better.
The pendulum is swinging the other way. It's just a question of which is the least worst system. And we're beginning to learn after 30 years that the least worst is a general system that pays everybody regardless. It is curious that as we're moving towards one system, the United States appears to be thinking of moving to the system where we're moving away from.
If it does, he and others say, the U.S. should learn from Britain's mistakes and tread cautiously. Kathleen Schalk, NPR News.